Reading from Bridge of Birds, a novel of an ancient China that never was, by Barry Hugart. Chapter 22, The Dream of the White Chamber. Night rain is falling on the village of Khufu, glinting through moonbeams that slide through thin clouds, and the soft splashing sound outside my window blends with the drip of ink from the mouse-whisker tip of my writing brush. I've been trying as hard as I can, but I am unable to express my emotions when the arms and the head of power brought the children back from death's doorstep and then failed to complete the cure. Once more they awoke, but into the strange world of the hopping hide-and-seek game, and once more they smiled and laughed and chanted the nonsense rhyme from Dragon's Pillow. Then once more they yawned, and their eyes closed, and they sank back upon their beds. Once more they dropped into the depths of their trances. People with nothing else to turn to must revert to the superstitions of their ancestors. And grandparents began to tie mirrors to the children's foreheads so that the demons of sickness would see the reflections of their own ugly faces and flee in terror. Fathers shouted their children's names while they waved favorite toys tied to long poles, hoping to entice the wandering souls, and mothers stood tensely at the bedsides with cords that would tie the souls to the bodies, should they return. I turned and ran into the abbot's study and slammed the door. Nothing but the heart of the great root of power could save the children of my village. I was sick with fear, and my eyes lifted to a framed quotation from The Study of the Ancients. All things have a root and a top, all events an end and a beginning. Whoever understands correctly what comes first and what follows draws nearer to Tao. I was a long way from drawing nearer to Tao, and children's games and nonsense rhymes and ginseng roots and birds and feathers and flutes and balls and bells and agonized ghosts and terrible monsters and the Duke of Qin whirled round and round in my brain without making any sense at all. The door opened, and Li Kao walked into the study. He drank three cups of wine, one after another, and then he sat down across from me and took the little bronze bell from his belt and gently rang it. We listened to the beat of a drum, and then the beautifully trained voice of a young woman began to chant and sing the story of the great courtesan who grew old and who was forced into the indignity of marrying a businessman. A second ring of the bell produced a lively tempo and the hilariously pornographic tale of Golden Lotus. A third ring brought sarcasm and suppressed rage and the story of Pi Kan, who was put to death because an idiot emperor wanted to see if it was true that the heart of a wise man is pierced by seven openings. We had a flute that told fairy tales, a ball that showed funny pictures, and a bell that sang flower drum songs. And we were supposed to exchange them for feathers. Li Kao sighed. He replaced the bell in his belt and poured another cup of wine. I am going to complete this task if I have to unscrew the roots of the sacred mountains, hoist a sail on top of Taishan, and steer the world across the great river of stars to the gates of the great void, he said grimly. Ox, the slight flaw in my character has proved to be a godsend. When I run into something that is really foul, I can counter with the potential for foulness that resides in the depths of my soul, and that is why I can go into a place like the Cavern of Bells and come out of it with a song on my lips. You, on the other hand, suffer from an incurable case a purity of heart. He paused to consider his words carefully, but I was ahead of him. Master Lee, it would take 20 tons of fire drug to pry me loose from the quest, I said as firmly as I could, which was not very firmly. Besides, we'll have to try to get to the Key Rabbit, and that means Lotus Cloud, and I will happily battle a tiger for the honor of hopping into her bed. To my astonishment, I discovered that what I had said was true. It was amazing what a tonic the thought of Lotus Cloud was, and I stared in wonder at hands that were no longer shaking. I will battle a regiment of tigers, I said with real conviction. Li Kao looked at me curiously. We sat in silence while the sound of two fighting cats drifted into the room, and then the sound of Auntie Hua going after them with a broom. Li Kao shrugged and reached out and pressed a finger to my forehead and quoted Lao Tzu, "Blessed are the idiots, for they are the happiest people on earth." "Very well. Both of us will commit suicide, but it's Qing Ming, and you must honor your dead. We'll leave in the morning," he said. I bowed and left him to his thoughts. I took some food and wine from the Bonze's pantry and went out into the bright sunshine, and I borrowed a hoe and a rake and a broom from the tool shed. It was the most perfect spring imaginable, glorious weather, for the Festival of Tombs, and I made my way to my parents' graves. I raked and pruned and swept until their resting place was spotless, and then I made an offering of food and wine. I had saved the tassels and ornaments from the fine hat that I had worn during our visit to the ancestress, and the silver belt with the jade trim and the gold-spattered fan. I placed the tassels and ornaments and belt in the bowl that I used for special offerings. Then I knelt to pray. I asked my mother and father to send me courage so that I would not disgrace my ancestors, and I felt much better when I had finished. Then I got to my feet and ran toward the eastern hills. Centuries ago, the great family of the Liu's had ruled our valley. The estate still stood at the crest of the largest hill, although the house was seldom visited by the owners now, and gardeners still maintained the famous park that had been lovingly described by such writers as Cao Shuaqin and Cao Nguo. I knew it like the back of my hand, and I crawled through the secret tunnel in the high wall into a gardener's paradise. The ground was shimmering with yellow chrysanthemums, and the hills were thick with silver poplars and nodding aspens. A stream arched down the side of a cliff in a foaming waterfall that splashed into a bright blue lake. The banks were lined with flowering peach and chiching trees, with violet flowers growing directly from the trunks and branches, and behind them was a shady bamboo grove, and then the pear trees, and then 1,000 apricot trees that were flaming with 1,000,000 scarlet blossoms. I followed the path around the moon terraces, and then turned off to a rough trail that led down through deep gorges with creepers and moss-covered great gray rocks. The trail dropped sharply down to the darkness of a cypress grove, where a quiet stream rippled past the sandbank harbor of blossoming purity, and I crawled beneath some low bushes and untied a small boat. I climbed in and pushed off and drifted down a long, winding gorge where willows bent their branches to brush the water, and spirit creepers wound over rocks, and clusters of fruit like red coral peeped beneath frost-blue foliage. When I had tied the boat to a tree trunk and picked up the trail again, it climbed toward bright clearings where winding brooks sparkled in green meadows, and always I reached hills or rocks that blocked the view and then opened to even more beautiful vistas on the other side. The path climbed steeply through masses of boulders toward a great, glorious rock that reached to the clouds. And on the other side was another gorge that was spanned by a narrow wooden bridge. Then the path climbed again and suddenly leveled to a small ridge where orchids grew and orioles sang and grasshoppers chirped in the bright sunshine. Far below, I could see my village spread out like a picture from a book. At the end of the ridge was a willow grove. I slipped inside to a small green glade where a single grave lay among the wildflowers. The head gardener's daughter was buried there. Her name had been Scented Hairpin, but since she had been a shy, quiet girl who was timid with strangers, everyone had called her Mouse. She had the most beautiful eyes that I had ever seen, and she had not been timid when we played the hopping hide-and-seek game. Mouse almost always lasted longest and became the queen, and she had also not been timid when she decided that someday we would be man and wife. She had fallen ill when she was 13. Her parents had let me hold her hand on her deathbed, and she had whispered the last words of May Fay. "I come from the land of fragrance. To the land of fragrance I now return." I knelt at the grave. "Mouse, it is number 10 ox, and I have something for you," I said. I placed the gold-spattered Sichuan fan in her offering bowl, and I prayed. And then I sat on the grass in the golden sunlight that filtered through the leaves and told her my story. I could not explain it, but somehow I knew that Mouse wouldn't mind the fact that I was in love with Lotus Cloud. I poured out my heart and felt it grow lighter, and the sun was setting as I finished. The breeze always picked up at the approach of evening, and I stayed to watch the willows. Mouse's heartbroken father had used his art to honor his daughter. The wind sighed through the trees, and the willows began to bend, and then one branch after another reached out and gently swept the young girl's grave. That night, I had a very strange dream. At first it was a tangle of images, henpecked Ho, weeping with a silver comb in his hands, and Bright Star dancing down the path toward a door that always closed, and Miser Shen praying to his daughter, and the Hand of Hell, and the Cavern of Bells. Again and again I fled from a great golden tiger mask, and then I ran through a door into a world of whiteness, milky and soft and glowing, and I felt comfortable and safe. Something was forming in the whiteness. I smiled happily because Mouse had come to see me. She carried the Sichuan fan, and her beautiful young eyes looked fondly at me. "How happy I am," she said softly. "Ever since we held hands and recited the orphan song, I knew that you would fall in love with Lotus Cloud." "Mouse, I love you too," I said. "You must trust your heart," she said gravely. "Ox, you have grown very strong. Now you must use all of your strength to touch the queen before the count reaches 49. It must not reach 49, which can mean forever and ever and ever." Mouse was fading back into the milky whiteness. "Is not 1,000 years enough?" she said faintly, as though from very far away. "The birds must fly. The birds must fly. The birds must fly." Mouse was gone, and for some reason I knew that it was important for me to understand the glowing whiteness around me. Suddenly I understood that the world was white because I was inside a giant pearl, and with awareness came awakening, and I sat up and blinked in the morning sunlight.